Better strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Carr Show.
I tore up a manifesto of mistruths. It was necessary to get the attention of the American people to say this is not true. And I don't need any lessons from anybody, especially the President of the United States, about dignity. I have tried to be gracious with him. I'm always dignified. I thought that was a very dignified act compared to my exuberance, as I said.
She's a nasty, vindictive, horrible person.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
But I do pray for him, and I do so sincerely.
I am profoundly religious. My faith is at the heart of who I am.
I don't like people who use their faith as justification for doing what they know is wrong. Nor do I like people who say, I pray for you, when they know that that's not so.
I had Nancy Pelosi sitting four seats away, and I'm saying things that a lot of people wouldn't have said, but I meant every word of it.
Who's your captain? Howie Carr.
And this is really not a news conference. It's not a speech. It's a celebration. We went through hell unfairly, did nothing wrong, but this is what the end result is. You can take that home, honey. Maybe we'll frame it. The only good headline I've ever had in the Washington Post.
Unchained and unstoppable.
It was evil. It was corrupt. It was dirty cops. It was leakers and liars. Adam Schiff is a vicious, horrible person. Nancy Pelosi is a horrible person. And this should never, ever happen to another president, ever. It was all bullshit.
Rump swabs, hacks, and moon bats beware. It's Howie Carr.
I don't usually stick around too long for victory celebrations. Once the game's over and, you know, they cut down the nets or whatever, or hold up the Lombardi trophy, I'm out of there.
You take your slice of cake and you run out the door.
I do. But this one, I stuck around all for the whole 45, 50 minutes. I loved it. I loved every moment of it. I wish it had gone on a little longer, actually. And it was so good. And I just, so during the break, I called up the Herald and I said, my newspaper, I'm writing a column for tomorrow about it. And I said, I'm running a little late. I'll get it to you by 7:30. And the editor said, are you going to use the word bull?
Bullshit.
And I said, yeah, I thought I was, but I'm going to, you know, put bleep in there. And he said, oh, no, you can use the word
bullshit.
You could write it out. I said, really? I said, this is a first. And he said, no, you know what? We're thinking about putting it on the front page.
Bullshit.
And how he reacted, like a 10-year-old who was just told he could say the F word.
Bullshit. In school.
He started jumping around the office.
I said, in that case, I'm going to have to rewrite the lead of my column. So I probably won't get it to you until 7:35, maybe even 7:40, because I'm going to have to rewrite the lead. That's great, though. That's wonderful. My late mother used to say, when I worked for Boston Magazine and the Boston Herald, I couldn't say the word bull.
Bullshit.
In the Herald, but I could say the word
bullshit
in Boston Magazine. My mother would say, why do you have to say that word, Howie? Why do you have to say that word in Boston Magazine? And I'd say, because that's one of I was always writing about Dapper O'Neill, the city councilor. I say Dapper always uses the word
bullshit.
That's a classic get out of jail free card. When you say, when I was little, if you'd swear, my mom would get mad. I'd say, I was quoting someone. It was part of the story. I didn't say it.
Oh yeah, like if you were singing along to a song on a radio and it had the word damn or hell in it, mom, I'm just singing along with it. That's the way it goes. I can't change the words.
Yeah, when Trump was elected in 2016, I've told this story before, I think. New Year's Eve that year, he was the president-elect, and it was the big New Year's Eve party at Mar-a-Lago, and he comes down, he's in a tuxedo, everybody's in a tuxedo, and he says, I want to thank all of my members here at Mar-a-Lago. I want to thank all my members. The rest of you, I don't give a
bullshit
about. Everybody's going like this because we'd never heard a president say that. You know, I'm sure, you know, Kennedy and Johnson and Nixon, of course, said it in the Oval Office. And we later heard the tapes, but they never said it in public.
Not your grandma's president.
And now it's going to be on the front page.
Not your Aunt Mabel's president.
No, it's going to be on the front page of the newspaper tomorrow. It's great.
Bullshit.
Welcome to the Howie Carr Show. And we're not going to, this is a show where there is no.
Oh,
right, Grace?
Indeed. Absolutely zero.
Bullshit.
You guys are killing me.
That's enough.
I've got to rewind this tape.
I know. Okay.
All right. Well, I really want to play a lot of the sound. Taylor and I watched the whole thing today, and it was really enjoyable.
We all watched it.
Yeah, and it was really fun because as much fun as it is when Trump takes questions, it is fun just knowing that he's in control and he doesn't have to deal with.
Bullshit.
Sorry, that one was by accident, but it did work. So he was in control, you know, doing his stand-up routine. He seemed really happy, really relaxed. And one of my favorite parts was when he gave a lot of kudos to people who deserve them. Jim Jordan, Matt Gaetz, a lot of guys who have been really tough, a lot of women as well, and just people who did a great job. And
sometimes it was in a rather awkward situation. Like he thanked the new female senator from Georgia who'd been on TV promoting him, Kelly, what's her name? But then he also thanked Doug Collins, the guy that he wanted to be appointed to the Senate after Johnny Isaacson quit in Georgia and who's now going to run against Kelly. And he introduced both of them, you know, which I thought, you know, and he handled it very well.
And it was funny because sometimes he'd give a shout out to someone. Like, for example, he'd say something like, oh, Howie Carr, you did such a great job. And then he'd get into a story that was totally different. And then he'd have to come back and say, right. So again, good job, Howie. And then he'd move on.
And then he would, at one point, like with Steve Scalise,
that's who I was going to mention. Yeah,
he got shot, at the congressional baseball practice. And so that reminded him that he was playing in the infield, and that got him into talking about Bobby Richardson, who was the second baseman for the Yankees back in the 60s.
Right.
And then, you know, your father and I were laughing about that because, I mean, this is sort of like Trump's Northeast roots, you know, because, you know, if you're from the Northeast or, you know, or a baseball fan in the 60s, you know that whole infield, you know, Cleet Boyer, third base, Kubek, shortstop, Richardson, second base, Moose Scoward, first base.
And it's more than Northeast, though. There's something about when you can say Trump's a billionaire, and for a lot of people, it seemed like, how could he be relatable? But when he talks about sports and it's not stiff or weird or phony, it reminds you of how awkward people like Barack Obama and John Kerry are when they try to talk about sports. There's such a disconnect because they don't know anything about it.
Yeah, when he talks about going to Kaminsky Field, remember
exactly.
that?
Exactly, and Trump just talks about it.
Or who was your favorite Oakland? Oh, I love the Oakland A's in the 70s. Well, who was your favorite Oakland A? And he can't remember Reggie Jackson?
Bullshit.
Sal Bando, Catfish Hunter, Vita Blue. He can't. That was his favorite team, but they have all these immortal players, and he can't remember one of them.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy. So I really.
But he was a football fan, you know. He liked the Nittany Lions.
I really liked when Trump was telling the story about Steve Scalise and how we all know he got shot at the baseball game. It was the congressional baseball game and
practice,
right. And he told the story about how upset Steve Scalise's wife was when Trump and Melania went to the hospital. And I just think this was such a funny part of the speech. This is cut 34.
And we saw a man that was not going to make it. He was not going to make it. He was the doctor. And I told him, his wife, I said, she loves you. Why do you say that? Because she was devastated. A lot of wives wouldn't give a damn. A lot of wives would have said, hey, yeah. I said, how's he doing? Oh, she couldn't even talk. She was inconsolable. Most wives would say, not good. Listen, I'm going home now. But the doctor came in. The wife is like, she was a total mess. She was really devastated.
So funny. And another one I really liked because we talk about it all the time. So Jim Jordan is known for not wearing a jacket. Jacketless Jim Jordan. And because he doesn't wear a jacket, sometimes Howie doesn't wear a jacket, not because of Jim Jordan, but when you don't wear a jacket, we get a lot of hate mail because people get so mad that, well, who does Howie think he is not wearing a jacket? And I'm sure at Jim Jordan's office, he must get calls all the time, because if you're getting calls, imagine what he's getting. He's on TV all the time, jacketless.
I can only imagine what he would get if he wore a pink jacket like I did.
Yeah, or open-toed shoes on TV.
Or right. Short pants.
Or short pants. Yeah, but we think he's a little wiser than that. But let's play. This is Trump mentioning what we've all talked about for so long, which is Jim Jordan never wears a jacket. This is cut 32.
When I first got to know him, Jim Jordan, when I first got to know Jim, I said, he never wears a jacket. What the hell's going on? He's obviously very proud of his body. And they say where he works out, you know, with the congressmen, senators, they work out. They say when Jim works out, even though he's not as young as he was, but he works out, the machine starts burning down. You know, it's just a different form of a workout than us. Right, Sonny?
So funny. And when we get back on the other side, I want to play. There was a really great moment where he gave kudos. And it's just nice seeing these guys who've worked so hard for him, but it's kind of a thankless job, get thanked for once, because right. They're doing all this work. And sometimes it's just, they have to sit through a lot of crap for Donald Trump, and he is very appreciative, and he named all of them, all the people that we pull sound from. We see them every day. Yeah. And one of them that I loved, and we'll play it on the other side, was he gave Chuck Grassley a shout out, and he actually did an imitation of Chuck Grassley. And Chuck was in the audience crying, laughing. He stood up.
And
he
was so great, excited. It was a great impersonation.
It was
too.
A great impersonation. And he's so cute. He's older, and he was so excited. He jumped right up to his feet and started waving at everybody. It's just, we always see Mitch McConnell and these guys. They're so serious, and they're always, you know, going through the drudgery of the day to day. And today was a fun day for them because they got a little recognition.
And he almost forgot to mention Louis Gohmert from Texas, who's been on the show. And you know, he said, "Oh man, it would have been bad if I forgot Louis Gohmert." And he, you know what he didn't mention, though, was that last night Louis Gohmert, after the acquittal, goes on TV, and he's got this giant button on. Did you see that?
No, what did it say?
Quit Mitt. And you could read it right on TV. It wasn't one of those things where you had to lean in. You could just like slide back and go, quit Mitt? Oh, beautiful, Louis. You're right on top of it. I'm Howie Carr.
He's suave. He's debonair. He's Howie Carr.
Hi, this is Val from Longmeadow, Mass.
Hi, this is Tony and Pietra from Havel, Massachusetts.
This is Murnie in Fairfax County, Virginia, and this is the Howie Carr Show.
844-500-4242. The Dem media are outraged that he said bleep, bleep. But he had no problems with saying, you know, when he talked about Haiti being and the African countries being, you know, what kind of holes. They had no problems. They went after that and said it over and over again. Now they're deeply respectful of Mitt Romney's religion. Remember? But when he was running for the Senate against Ted Kennedy in Massachusetts in 1994, Joe Kennedy, his Ted's nephew, the congressman at the time, said he kept saying, well, you know, he's a member of the Mormon, he's a bishop in the Mormon church, and they don't allow women to be clergy, and they don't allow blacks in the church, that's not even true, but you know, it used to be.
But who cares, right? Who cares what's true? Let's just say it.
Right.
Well, see if it sticks.
Joe Kennedy had to apologize finally about that, but again, he didn't take any grief, but now... Oh, that was such a moving speech when he cited his Mormon faith. They have said this, that's just, the hypocrisy is just, you can cut it with a knife. If you haven't taken care of your Valentine's needs with 1-800-Flowers, what are you waiting for? Right now you can get 18 red roses for $29.99 or upgrade to 24 red roses for $10 more. To order, go to 1-800-Flowers.com, click the radio icon and enter code Howie. Taylor, what's the poll question? What are the results thus far?
Should Bernie Madoff be released from prison?
No. No.
8% say yes.
Yeah, guys, so there were so many...
It's even lower at the Palm Beach Country Club, where he probably ripped off 95% of the people.
Yeah, Kevin Bacon's definitely voting a couple times in this poll. He's like, honey, give me your phone. I got to vote. I want to talk a little bit, too, about this trend. Everything the Democrats are doing is so predictable, Howie, and I noticed this today. It's like, so Nancy Pelosi rips up the speech. It backfires terribly. She gets horrible press for it. People are really mad. We played some of the C-SPAN callers. Then you know what the next thing is? The rhetoric that's being used against Nancy Pelosi and now Adam Schiff.
They're weaponizing.
He has some mysterious package sent to him. Is Donald Trump to blame for this? Yeah. It's like, stop making us feel like we can't dunk on you. You dunk on us every time we do something wrong, and then when we dunk on you, it's we're seizing, pouncing, there's blood on our hands. I don't think so.
Don't forget weaponizing. But you know, it's amazing it took to Thursday for this to happen, though. You know, the Iowa caucuses are a total disaster. They didn't know what they were doing. So today there's a new explanation for what happened.
Do you have a mirror, guys? Because you're the explanation.
The Trump people, when they heard that they were having a problem with the phone lines, began making trolling phone calls into the Iowa State Democratic headquarters to tie up the phone lines.
Interference in an election.
And you know they were. You know what the Republicans out in Iowa, they were getting assistance from Macedonian troll farms.
Meddling.
Paid for by Vladimir Putin.
All right, so I did promise this cut before we went to break. This is Trump doing his best Chuck Grassley impression. This is cut 23.
We're doing very well in Iowa, but I'll tell you, Chuck Grassley, he's looking to call me. Well, you tell me, what did you say? Now, he wasn't being rough. That was just the way he talked. And that was when Comey announced that he was leaking, lying, and everything else, right? He choked because he never heard anybody talk like that. You know, you should have gone. I wish you got angry. You could have gotten the whole ball game. He would have said, "I give up."
I love it. Those letters that Grassley writes, Grassley and Johnson write. You know, and I assume it's their aides. You know, because it's just written in very legalese. But it's just they're just so scathing, these letters.
Howie, I also wanted to let people know that yesterday Trump tweeted out. He's been really tweeting a lot of videos out because people make hilarious videos, and he's like the first president to decide, you know what, this is free campaigning. We can just retweet these and everyone will see them. So someone retweeted a video where Trump, it's a Trump sign and he's kind of standing above it and it says 2020 and then it says 2040 and then it says 2060 and then it eventually just kind of, you know, teeters out until infinity. And this is what Bette Midler said about that tweet in all caps. He pinned this. That means he put it to the top of his Twitter. You think this is a joke, don't you? It's not. He means it. He will change the rules and his enablers will let him. If he wins again, he will rule you until he dies. You die or both. Then you'll get Ivanka.
Bette, go back to the Boogie Woogie Bugle Boys of Company B.
This is what I have to say to Bette Midler. And I didn't even have to pre-rip that because I'm young and I'm strong, Nancy.
The president retweeted one of my tweets last night, too. Thank you, Mr. President. I'm Howie Carr.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
But now we have that gorgeous word. I never thought a word would sound so good. It's called total acquittal. Total acquittal.
I love the fact that he kept using the words dirty cops over and over again. He totally understands and he's been following this. I guess I knew he was following it, but he had such a recall of the details. I mean, he could just step right in here or do any other talk show on the TV or the radio and just talk. He studies it. And I guess it's obvious because it affects him. You know, like he made the point that, that all of us have made over and over again, which was, you know, they said, well, he said all these things, the quid pro quos 9 times. He was threatening the president of Ukraine. That's what the whistleblower said. And so then he released the transcript, right? And then they said, well, this transcript is made up. This is not what really happened. So then they bring in Soviet-born Lieutenant Colonel Vindman under oath, and they ask him, was the transcript accurate? Because he was listening and he knows English and Ukrainian. So he could understand both ends. And he said, yes, it was. So my question has always been, and Trump said it again today, after Vindman, who hates me and who speaks Ukrainian in English, says the transcript is accurate and there's nothing, no smoking gun in the transcript, why did the investigation go on?
I mean, they said, oh, well, maybe the transcription is not correct. But Lieutenant Colonel Vindman and his twin brother, right? We had some people that really amazing, but we did everything. We said, what's wrong with it? Well, they didn't add this word or that. It didn't matter. I said, add it. They're probably wrong, but add it. So now everyone agrees that they were perfectly accurate.
Exactly. So what was going on? And then you know, then they kept saying, well, you know, he was trying to affect the 2020 election by going after his opponent. But again, you know, and again, these are points that we've all thought about, and we've made them to our friends or family. But it's different when the president of the United States is saying the same thing. This is about the people on the jury. I mean, these people would not have been allowed in a jury pool. You can make certain objections to jurors if they're biased. The prosecution and the defense in a criminal trial have a certain number of peremptory challenges that they can make, but that didn't apply here. Cut 21.
They're saying the most horrendous things about me. It's okay, it's politics. And then they're supposed to vote on me. They're trying to replace me, and then they're supposed to be voting. So I think it's incredible.
I mean, so what gets me, it's just a totally uncharted waters, but you have the president of the United States, they attempted to frame him and he survived and he understands it. But what's even stranger is the people that tried to frame him are still walking around. I mean, not that we live in a dictatorship where, you know, you're rounded up and you're thrown into the hole, you know, and that's it. But they haven't even been indicted. Some of them are still on the government payroll, like Bruce Orr. Bruce Orr was part of this whole conspiracy. And I don't think he has any power. He just goes, they just have him in a cubicle at the Justice Department. But he's on the payroll. He's a deputy assistant associate attorney general or something like that. 844-500-4242.
Dirty cops, bad people. If this happened to President Obama, a lot of people would have been in jail for a long time already. Many, many years.
Exactly. There were so many great lines. Just play cut. We'll take some calls here in a moment, but just cut 39. I love this one. Cut 39.
So they left Bob Mueller. He had the look, but he didn't have a lot of other things. Always had the look. Mr. G-Man. And I love the FBI, and the FBI loves me 99%. It was the top scum, and the FBI people don't like the top scum.
Did you ever think you'd have the President of the United States calling the FBI top scum? But you know what? He's right. He's absolutely right. Why not call them what they are? They tried to overthrow the elected president of the United States, and they were willing to obstruct justice and commit perjury to do it. And last week there was a column in the Wall Street Journal by James Freeman, the best. It's the internet column, best of the internet or online. And he talked about this guy, Kevin Kleinsmith, the guy that's named in the Inspector General's report. He's a lawyer for the FBI, a big resistance guy. He said, you know, he's like the whistleblower, Charamella. They hate the president. They make no bones about it. So he gets he's in charge of writing the FISA warrant application so that they can continue surveilling Carter Page. And that way they get into everybody in the Trump campaign. And so the CIA sends him an email and they say, Carter Page has been an asset to us in our investigations of Russian espionage. And this guy, Kleinsmith, who's a lawyer who works for the FBI, inserts the word not into it. He's not an asset for the CIA. So in other words, he destroys the exculpatory evidence to continue what becomes an illegal surveillance of a guy who's a patriot, who's working for the CIA pro bono, who's a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy, a military veteran, Carter Page. And so Freeman writes this column and says, how come there's no interest in the mainstream media about this guy? How come there's not? How come they're not doing takeout after takeout after takeout on Kevin Kleinsmith, this deranged Democrat? And so Powerline Blog picks it up, powerlineblog.com picks it up. And I saw that there, and I retweeted it on my account. You know, why is there no mainstream media interest in Kevin Kleinsmith? And last night, the president of the United States, this was a week later, almost a week later, the president of the United States, Donald Trump, tweets it out, retweets my retweet. And I'm so glad he did, you know, because again, it shows how closely he's following this whole thing. Why, you know, I hope that, you know, that the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, MSNBC are capable of being embarrassed into covering this. This is a major scandal. And I'm so happy that the president just kept laying it out today for 45, 50 minutes. Cindy, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Cindy.
Hello, Mr. Carr.
Hi.
I want to thank you so much for your show.
Thank you.
I also want to thank President Trump for informing me to watch Newsmax. I only voted for one president in my life, and I'm old, okay? And that was Ross Perot, who told me there would be a giant sucking sound. And you know what, Mr. Carr? I felt it. I lost my job making boots. They took my company away, Edible Hartsville, Tennessee, when I'm back in Smyrna now, but I was in Nashville. I'm not going to stand for this, and I'm not going to stand for lies. Everything that they're doing is liars, liars, liars.
That's what he said today.
Pelosi did. And what they did, Pelosi, she was finally, I've watched that whole thing, all right, for all that time I had to watch it. And I watched it on C-SPAN, and I saw, why does she keep pulling some papers down? And she was pulling them behind the desk.
Yeah, no, she was totally defending it. Let's play the cut of her cut four.
That was not a state of the union. That was his state of mind. We want a state of the union. Where are we? Where are we going? And the rest. Now, let me just show you how many guests I can draw. And let me say how I can give a Medal of Honor. Do it in your own office. We don't come in your office and do congressional
business. Medal of Honor?
Why are you doing that here?
I didn't hear that till now. I knew that Stephanopoulos had called it the Medal of Honor.
Let me just show you how many guests I can draw. And let me say how I can give a Medal of Honor. Do it.
Play cut five.
You know, a speed reader. I just went right through that thing. So I knew what was coming when I saw the compilation of falsehoods. But then when I heard like the first quarter or third, then I start to think there has to be something that clearly indicates to the American people that this is not the truth. And he has shredded the truth in his speech. He's shredding the Constitution in his conduct. I shredded his State of His Mind address. Thank you all very much.
She's just a two-legged paper shredder. That's all she is.
Wait, Howie, if she's a...
You need something shredded, just hand it to Nancy Pelosi, and she'll handle it for you. You don't need to invest in a big paper shredder.
If she's a speed reader, why did we have to pass Obamacare before he found out what was in it?
That's right. It should. Yeah, 900 pages. It should have taken her no more than an hour or two to read the thing. Right, exact. Good point, Taylor. Neil, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Neil.
Howie, no disrespect to you. I listen to you every day, every afternoon. But Rush has the premier radio show in the country. And for them to call him a racist, for all he's done, you know, the Rush Revere books and so forth. I don't know if you remember the guy that used to fill in for him, Walter Williams.
Yeah.
One of the most intelligent guys I've ever heard.
Right.
And he used to say, I'm Walter Williams, and I'm black by popular demand. And
right. Rush is a close friend of Clarence Thomas, too. You know, he's been at his house. They've had dinner together. I mean, this is all BS. As I said last night with Tucker, you know, I mean, everybody who's been on the air for 30 years, 3-4 hours a day is going to say a few things they regret. But I mean, Neil, how about all the stuff that Al Sharpton has said over the years? You know, how about Jews, about Greeks, about gays? I mean, he's not being criticized on a daily basis. Has Rush ever sent his minions to Ronan Farrow? I said this last night too. Has he ever sent his minions to Ronan Farrow and said, you better lay off Harvey Weinstein. Just let him go on raping those women. But you can't get arrested in this town if you say anything about Harvey Weinstein. Has Rush Limbaugh ever been on Jeffrey Epstein's plane down to, you know, the Lolita Express down to those islands where they were having orgies with underage girls? You know? But they don't. They want to attack Rush. There was a Milwaukee school teacher who he's now been suspended, and he's taken his Twitter down. He said he hoped Rush died soon. I mean, he's not the only one. This guy just happened to have a public payroll. 844-500-4242. I'm Howie Carr.
Howie Carr. You can trust him. He's not like the others.
This is Mark in Williston, Vermont.
This is Marie in Somerville, Massachusetts.
This is Mike from South Attleboro, Mass. And this is the Howie Carr Show.
Hail to the Chief. I thought that was a nice touch, playing the Hail to the Chief as the president walked in to the celebration this morning or this early this afternoon. 844-500-4242. John Brennan was very disturbed that Rand Paul released the name of the whistleblower, Eric Ciaramella. And Rand Paul is beneath contempt. He typifies the worst of President Trump's craven enablers. Any senator excusing this dangerous behavior makes a mockery of public service. But of course, Rand Paul slammed back. But it looks like we didn't print off that part. I'm going to have to wait to get that. If someone could print that for me, Rand Paul's response, that would be great. 84, I don't know what happened to it. All right, we'll get it in a moment. 844-500-4242. It's very busy around here these days. Joe, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, Howie. I just wanted to bring up a point about Mitt Romney. Didn't he belong to Bain Capital?
Yes, he did.
They used to buy companies.
Yes.
Used to buy companies, and and run them out of business and put everybody out of work and then make money selling off all the assets.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what the Democrats said about him in those days. Now he's Saint Met, you know? Now that he's stabbed the president in the back, we're not going to talk about that. You know how Bain Capital, though, Joe, even before Mitt decided to turn against Mitt Romney, do you know how Bain Capital bought themselves protection from the media mob? When Deval Patrick, the governor of Massachusetts, left office, he's now allegedly running for president. When he couldn't get a job after he left as governor of Massachusetts, the first black governor of Massachusetts, Bain Capital gave him a job. And there hasn't been a single negative story about Bain Capital since they gave Deval Patrick a job. And so this is how they play the game. And now Mitt Romney is, you know, Mitt's sitting in his Senate office and he just keeps rereading the story about himself in the New York Times about what a wonderful, deeply religious, wonderful family man he is. This is the same newspaper that was saying that he tried to kill his dog by putting him on the roof of the car for the ride from Massachusetts to Michigan. This is the same guy who belongs to the Mormon religion. This is the same guy who didn't pay his taxes for 5 years. I'm going to vote to convict President Trump. Mitt, you're wonderful. For a day. I'm Howie Carr.